Hello and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about the galaxy's greatest comics, especially the British ones. I'm Eamon Clark and I am at Lawless in Bristol once again with the People's Interviewer, the Comics Don, and last cadet judge walking at this morning's hot dog run, Richard Chief. Welcome back to the book club.
Lovely to be here, Eamon. Thank you for inviting me back.
It's great to have you in Bristol. We're becoming this is now becoming an annual regular thing, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Because you worked out we've done, this is number six.
It's number six, yeah.
Yeah, and the last five of them, including this one, have all been at Lawless.
Yeah, yeah. We're too lazy to organise anything else the rest of the year.
We're just creatures of habit, yeah. Okay, so we've got lots to do. Enough of the pleasantries. We've got lots to talk about. Tell us, very interesting, what have you chosen for this episode of the book club?
For this episode of the book club, Eamon, I've chosen to talk about Jeff Hawke. Newspaper strip, occasionally reprinted by Titan Books, a couple of times in the 80s, a couple of times in the early noughties. So particularly the first volume in the Overlord, it's called the hardback from February 2008. It contains 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stories in the Jeff Hawke universe.
Right, and due to me not reading your notes, I ended up with the Titans. I've got two volumes of the Titans, which I already had. I don't know how I have them, but I already had them. Anyway, so now I've got a slightly battered copy of the Overlord hardback, which is, as you say, that's 2008.
2008. Right. Okay. Yeah. So. It looks like, you know, if you get two softbacks, two hardbacks, you think, haven't I just doubled up here? And there is definitely some overlap in the, quite a lot of overlap in the stories between those volumes, but you will get slightly more stories in the hardback volumes if you get both of them than if you get both the softback volumes.
Right.
And obviously you don't have to deal with Titan glue from the 1980s, which is, you know.
The infamous Titan glue, yeah. The Daily Express, 1960-61, written by Willie Patterson, art by Sidney Jordan, who we're going to be talking about a lot. Yeah. There's an introduction in the hardback by Sidney Jordan, and of course covers for all three are by one Mr. Brian Bollard, who's probably still downstairs signing as we speak.
He probably is, yes. He's a big Jeff Hawke fan. He did work on the strip right at the end of its life. But yeah, two covers, and I've definitely seen a sort of a rough that he did for the third cover, which I think has maybe even made it into sort of a, I think he tarted it up at one point and made it into, this is what it would have looked like if we'd ever got to a third volume. But we never did, so the one that got away from Brian there. But he's,
well,
a big fan.
I'm jumping ahead, but I did ask Brian Bolland downstairs to sign one of these Titans, yeah. And he did sort of say, I did a third cover, never got used, I'm very upset about it. In that way that sometimes artists do.
Yeah. All right. So if I after this go downstairs and ask him to do this, I'm picking an open wound now. He's going to be even more upset.
Right? No, he was fine. He was quite pleased to see the Titan.
Right.
But yeah, he did say, you know, nobody ever printed my third cover.
Yeah.
Anyway, so first of all, why Jeff Hawke and Sidney Jordan?
Well, I mean, we should start by saying that Sidney Jordan is still alive. I think he's 98, I think, by my calculations.
Yeah.
So he would be the oldest artist I think we're going to say we've ever talked about on the book club. So I mean, I saw him 18 months ago, so you know, it seemed, in if I'm in that sort of shape when I'm 96 and a half, then I'll be very happy. So
yeah, Brian Bolland did actually say he'd spoke to him on the phone recently and he's doing really well.
Yeah So no, I mean, it was an event at the Cartoon Museum one night all about him. But why did I pick it? Well, you know, I love science fiction, British science fiction. I like 50s RAF stuff in space. You know, you may have detected I'm a Dan Dare fan over the years, Eamon. You may have picked up these nuances. this sits firmly in that sort of genre, in that sort of space. You know, it's a bit John Wyndham, you know, some of it feels a bit John Wyndham. You know, it's sort of it's not science fiction set 100 years, 200 years in the future. It feels like this could happen tomorrow to us. It's, you know, it's very grounded in the world in which we live, and yet these fantastical things happen to the character Jeff Hawke.
Okay, well, the character Jeff Hawke, who is Jeff Hawke? What are these stories basically about?
So I mean, there are a lot of stories over the years, and, you know, I think it runs for about, it's over 20 years, 6,500 episodes.
Yeah.
So that is a lot, you know, almost all of them drawn by Sidney Jordan few for Brian Bolland at the end and a few for a couple of other people. But he is sort of a... When he starts and where he ends up are quite different places. You know, his character changes quite a lot over the run of the story. But he's sort of, he starts off as a sort of a test pilot, sort of fighter pilot, sort of ace who's, you know, called upon to, you know, investigate sort of strange goings on that are happening in space or on the edge of space, I guess. So he has that's what he's bringing. So yeah, so very, you know, it feels like, you know, strong sort of echoes of Dan Dare and the sort of the RAF in space. But as the stories progress, I guess the sort of the volume of stories you can tell like that, you know, that well runs dry, and actually he becomes more of an ambassador for Earth, and he's often used, you know, in other places and in other ways, or to, you know, to fight Earth's corner in some galactic dispute. So even though the world it's set in is very, looks very familiar, it's very much, oh yeah, that's what, you know, 1960s England would have looked like, you know, when they are on the ground, but yet they can get to Pluto in a fortnight.
Right.
You know, so part of it is very, feels very, very real. And then part of it is like, oh, but by the way, you know, we can do massive intergalactic space travel and there are aliens and that's all fine. But the world looks like it does at the moment. And it's, you know, so yeah, so it's an interesting mix. Whereas I guess the Dan Dare world was, you know, had all been futurized, as it were. You know, this is what all, you know, all the buildings look different, or, you know, the world building is very different. Whereas the world building, I guess, that Sydney and then Willie Paterson, scriptwriter, take on, you know, changes as it goes on, and is more based on space rather than Earth.
Right.
Yeah.
And describe the layout of the strip for us, because these are daily newspaper strips, which, as you said in your notes, 6,500 episodes altogether.
Yeah. So yeah, it's, you know, from when there would be a lot of, you know, comic strips in the newspaper, the funny pages would not just have funny pages on them. You know, they would not just have funny strips. There would be, you know, more sort of adult in terms of, you know, stories. I'm trying not to say the words George and Lynn, because
right.
Not that sort of adult. There were, so Rip Kirby, Modesty Blaze, Garth, Matt Marriott, which is a Western strip, Gun Law, another Western strip, things like AXA, which is a cavewoman strip. So, you know, it's not just funnies. There were, you know, it was a great variety of things on the comics pages in the newspapers. But yeah, like you say, it's a daily strip, you know, which comes with its own, you know, to my mind, you know, the sort of the pressure on that to sort of, you have to, you know, got 3-4 panels and you have to wrap up yesterday's, you know, sort of cliffhanger, advance the story in the second frame, and then by the fourth frame have set up another cliffhanger to be resolved the next day. So the sort of the skill involved in doing that to me seems particularly, you know, kind of mind bending, because that's so hard to do if you're in a very small amount of space.
So Sydney Jordan, black and white, as you say, yeah. Strips, 3 or 4 panels. I noticed that as some of these stories progress, he seems to almost have the confidence to occasionally just say, right, I'm just going to do one big horizontal panel.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's going to be a big splash for one day. And then the next day I'll do the 3 panels and catch up on the plot of it.
Which seems very unusual. I'm not aware of it in other sorts. I mean, I've read, so the strip I've... newspaper strip I've read the most over the years is probably the Doonesbury strip,
right,
by Gary Trudeau, which has been running for over 50 years, and you know, I don't see that as a, you know, as a method or as a sort of device that he uses to tell the story. I, you know, not for lack of confidence, I'm sure, but yeah, these sort of occasional sort of, it would be the effective equivalent of a quadruple page spread or something, because you've got all 4 frames into one. So yeah, those ones, when they come across, they're always like, oh, this is, you know, something special that has to go on here that you can only be told like this.
I'm going to jump back to story for a bit. This, obviously, the Jeff Hawke strip has like ongoing stories that last for so many weeks, and then they sort of wrap up and he starts a new story or a new adventure. And in this Overlord collection, I think, according to your notes, we've got 4 stories collected.
4 stories, yeah. So the strips typically run for about 90 episodes. So, you know, it's sort of 3 or 4 months in one go. And you're right, there are 4 stories, because these hardback editions are 4 stories. So there's, and these are, across both the hardbacks. These are the stories from, I think there are 70 stories in total, and these are stories 14, 15, 20, up to 22. So, four in here: Overlord, Survival, Wondrous Lamp, and Counsel for the Defence. Consistent.
Right. And you mentioned that it's sort of like the RAF in space. Mm. And they are space adventures, and there are aliens, and as you say, they travel to other planets. But strangely, it's not a sort of ray gun space adventure. It's not all sort of atomic weapons. And there's an awful lot of space diplomacy and space lore, isn't there?
It's the sort of, not the mundanity of space, but it's not the sort of
the bureaucracy.
Yeah, the bureaucracy. Not the, what would Conrad call it? The battle action playset.
Yes.
You know, Dan Dare. You know, it's not that, you know, we are not dumping nukes from space and destroying the whole planet. That is absolutely, if that's your jam, that's fine. But that's not what this is. This is, like I say, it's a lot of bureaucracy in space. And actually, you know, we sort of probably conceptually sort of venerate the idea of aliens, and it'd be amazing to meet these people, and they'll be, you know, they'll be advanced life forms because they've, you know, they found us, and actually a lot of these life forms that we meet seem seem quite a long way from that. They're, you know, it turns out really they're just people.
Yeah.
They just happen to be alien people, and therefore they sort of squabble their way through life, and, you know, are sort of bumbling through it rather than being the all-conquering hordes that are set to invade us and subjugate us. It's not, so again, it's quite different from maybe the Dan Dare strip of the late 50s where the Mekon, you know, does invade Earth and does indeed, you know, subjugate the population. So
yeah, I was fascinated that Jeff Hawke himself seems, like I said, he seems less the sort of space action hero, more the sort of ambassador for Earth, called in to defend aliens against various crimes. I was astonished.
It is, but I mean, it is very, you know, very different from, you know, from a lot of strips. It doesn't have that big gung ho action sort of side to it. It is definitely more cerebral, and, you know, I think probably at its peak when Willie Patterson is writing these sort of intelligent, you know, stories about, you know, space travel and life beyond Earth. But I think that's probably helped it ultimately, you know, and sort of sustain its quality rather than relying on, let's just bomb the heck out of these aliens and, you know, in a gung-ho way and off we go. So,
As well as Jeff Hawke, we've got some other memorable characters in these four stories. I mean, obviously some of them are aliens, which I'm going to mention in a moment.
Yeah.
Any particular standout characters apart from Jeff himself?
Well, I guess so. At the start, there's Jeff, and then his sort of his right hand man Mac, who is, he's more than the sort of the Digby in the Dan Dare strip, for instance. You know, he's not quite an equal, but, you know, but he's a pilot as well. Got a sort of buzz cut sort of haircut. And there is a character, there's a female character as well called Laura, who's in the strip more at the start and less as we go on. And I think she is less, you know, if Mac is more than Digby, she is less than Professor Peabody. And although, you know, she's certainly in the first story, I think in Overlord, she is the sort of, these telepathic messages are coming through her, and she's the sort of centre to the plot. But I'm not so mad on her. So in Overlord, like I say, there are a great galaxy or a selection of aliens to choose from. There's the Rimpf, these beetles. There are Wuggors. There's the Beam, which is a tiny insect which controls the Wuggle. I had to write this all down because there were so many of them all. There's Talid, the reasonable fish, and over it all is Chalcedon, who is, if you've got the Overlord volume in front of you, there's a large green-skinned alien wearing a very large sort of hide pressure spacesuit,
battle suit, or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, he would definitely be the. He would definitely be happily dropping nukes from space.
Chalcedon is the classic space alien villain, isn't he?
He is the Mekon of this piece, with probably with even fewer scruples. Amazingly,
I'm just going to mention two characters that appear. One of them appears throughout the book, which is the rather fussy bureaucratic alien. Is it Culverock?
Culverock, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Sort of like squid-like alien who's a very sort of fussy bureaucrat. And then there's a space babe, if you'll pardon the expression, who turns up later on, called Skipper something or other, who has the most wonderful foul mouth in a sort of restrained newspaper way, sort of expressions, including the one panel that I love where she calls Chalcedon a blazing nutter.
They're quite the pair, aren't they?
Yeah. So, yeah. And we'll come back to Kolvarok in a moment when we talk possibly about Mr. Bolland again.
Yes. He's a fan.
Okay, I mean, we're not going to go through the four stories in detail, because obviously there's an awful lot of stuff goes on when you're producing a daily strip. There is, amazingly, like I say, space diplomacy. There's the trip back from wherever they're going, where they get stranded for a while, and his right-hand man, Mac, appears to be...
Oh, yes, he's sort of...
altered or...
sort of upgraded.
Upgraded by an alien consciousness or something like that, and you get this weird, he's no longer one of us story.
Yeah.
And he's got superpowers, which is quite strange.
Yeah.
He can repair their atomic engines, but doesn't want to, and they have to sort of trick him into doing it.
And then invent a device so that he loses his powers by the end of the story.
And he's back to being...
Back to being normal. Yeah. So this is, in the end, it's his... The sort of the alien space powers that he's been granted clash with his sort of innate humanity, and you know, it's not an upgrade, it turns out, having these special powers. So Overlord, Survival, Wondrous Lamp, and Council for the Defence. I mean, I think Council for the Defence is definitely the sort of the space diplomacy story par excellence. That's the one. That's the story that's often cited as the best story in the history of Jeff Hawke. But I really like Wondrous Lamp, which is the third story, which starts off as a sort of... It just feels like it's explaining the history of sort of Aladdin and his magic lamp. And actually sort of unpicking that and saying, actually, this is how that story might have come about. There's a spacey element to it.
Yes.
And it's this. And you go, oh, this, I know exactly how this story is going to end. We're all going to go, oh, it's Aladdin and his wondrous lamp. His magic lamp. And then there's a sci-fi twist. And then it becomes a sci-fi... alien invasion epic, which you like. I didn't see that coming. That was out of nowhere. So I won't spoil it. But Wondrous Lamp is a great story.
Yes, well, that is an interesting story. And if I'm going to be careful about avoiding spoilers, but we have already mentioned Conrad and the 2000 AD Future Shock twist, where there is an invasion, and then there is a... Let's say there's an error of scale.
An error of scale,
And I did actually, because Douglas Adams has done that as well.
Okay.
And I did try to wonder when was the first example of this. And actually, it may be John Wyndham, who you've already mentioned.
Oh, okay.
It may be a John Wyndham short story. But anyway, there you go. Yeah. And then Council for the Defence, where Jeff Hawke is summoned. Is he summoned back to Jupiter? Again, to be...
He ends up in Galactopolis, I think, isn't it? Which is a sort of it's the centre of the galactic universe to go on. He effectively is on trial because galactic law defines that you are as charged as the...
As your client.
So there's suddenly he's being charged with blowing up 12 known galaxies or whatever it is, and just the interactions between the characters as they double cross each other, it feels like absolutely races along, which is no mean feat at sort of three or four panels a day.
Before we're supposed to be talking about Sidney Jordan's art,
we'll get to that.
But I did have this question in my notes, which is, when is this comic set? Because in what's becoming a regular theme for you and me, Richard, very early on, he meets the Prime Minister. And the Prime Minister is very Churchillian. It does look like he's meeting Churchill.
Yeah.
And then later on, did they get the 1990s or something like that? It's set. I don't know.
That episode, so this is in The Wondrous Lamp, there is a lot of... sort of that Earth-based stuff, or like I say, they meet the Prime Minister, there's a Secretary of State, and everything sort of is going wrong in his office, he has his slippers in the office, he has a secretary who's writing letters to his clubs. That is very 60s. There is absolutely no doubt about that sort of, that world is in But by the way, they can go to Pluto in a month or whatever it is. So the space world is very different, but the England feels very, very of its time.
Right.
So
I did one that, you know, here's a, oh yeah, that's the wondrous lamp. There's a date stamp of 1935. Yeah. And I'm sure there's a date stamp later of 1990 something.
Yeah.
As this lamp travels through time. I did wonder also, as I said, whether or not his various trips to Jupiter was causing time dilation. And he was actually, you know, time was passing quicker here while he was out in space.
I guess if we think about time, I suppose the most famous element of the Jeff Hawke strip is there's a strip published just before these, so in November 1959, where there's a stone on the moon which commemorates the first moon landing that says this happened on the 4th of August 1969, which, as we know, is pretty close to when it actually
pretty
happened.
Pretty close.
But that was Sydney's prediction in November 1959, and he got it within a fortnight of the date. So, yeah, that's pretty good.
Sydney Jordan is, thankfully, long-lived, healthy, yeah, successful career. Willie Paterson, I think, died much younger, didn't he?
Much younger and much less happy life.
Right, yeah. I think. Complicated life.
Yes, yeah. I think there are, I'm sure we'll put it in the show notes, but I think there are some couple of articles about Willie Paterson that are on the Down the Tubes website that I think family members sort of wrote or prepared for that to sort of highlight what he'd worked on and to celebrate his life. But yeah, Willie Paterson.
And Sidney Jordan wrote very sort of movingly about his friend in some of the introductions in the 80s and again in 2008. So, okay, well, let's talk about Sidney Jordan, because obviously there's the artwork.
Yeah.
The sheer volume of work of doing this every day for the Daily Express, it's quite, you know, daunting. But here he is. So he's got this black and white, three or four panels horizontal comic strip.
Yeah.
For the listeners, what would you say about the art? How would you describe his artwork?
How would I describe it? I mean, it's very, I think, you know, it's very realistic. It's not sort of, you know, it's not sort of stylized in any way. You know, it's it looks, you know, very, very good. They're very, you know, believable. The character, you know, the alien characters, the human characters, as they, you know, wander the stars, or, you know, survive the challenges that they face sometimes back on Earth. It, you know, it just looks like, you know, a comic strip, but in the, you know, it's, you know, it's not super muscly men going into space. There are some space babes that come up from time to time, and certainly more of those in the later years of the strips. You know, it becomes particularly noticeable. But actually these in the sort of late '50s, early '60s, maybe more prurient sort of time. So they're that's not a particular problem here. So no, it's just very beautifully, a fantastic level of detail, you know, cross hatching everywhere, that is just beautiful to look at.
Yeah, I mean, I think I put this in our notes as well, that, you know, Johnny Cannon talking on the book club about Garth by Frank Bellamy, and the amount of detail in the background, cross hatching, and then the sort of cosmic noodling that goes on is wonderful. Jeff Hawke He's a sort of conventional-looking RAF space hero with his quiff. Doesn't quite have the dandere eyebrows, but he's getting close.
But he's pretty close. He's upper middle class white, you know, man, wears a tie a lot of the time. You know,
yes.
Looks, you know, looks ambassadorial. You know, even when he's relaxing, I'm not sure how he relaxes, but you know, or if he relaxes,
he doesn't get much time for that.
It's always very busy saving the world again.
Yes.
So, yeah.
The space stuff, the spaceships, the aliens, Chalcedon's wonderful space suit that he wears all the time, and then the sort of planetary background, I don't know, like almost Jack Kirby type cosmic Kirby crackle in places, is breathtaking. And then the confidence, as I say, that from time to time to just say, right, it's three or four panels across the page, I'm going to do one panel.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be huge and you know, it's going to detail one moment from this story, and we'll catch up with things again tomorrow with three panels.
Yeah, fantastic. Just, yeah, that sort of, like I say, that confidence to go, this is the best way to move the story forward, because, you know, else three panels, it's so hard to catch up, resolve, continue. But yeah, so a single panel. So yeah, beautiful stuff from Jordan.
And hopefully Sydney Jordan continues to be long-lived and healthy and well, because this is sensational stuff. We'll talk a bit more about the art in a moment when we particularly start choosing some pages and panels. The Jeff Hawke strip is very popular, and as it sometimes happens, it's very popular in other parts of the world, isn't it?
Compared to this country, yeah. I mean, I think the Italians are spectacularly keen on
Jeff Hawke.
So, you know, if you are Italian or you go onto ebay.co.it, you know, you can, I'm convinced, buy all the volumes of Jeff Hawke stories you ever wanted, you know, in more than one edition. So it's very popular, I think, in Scandinavia as well. Again, I think on Down the Tubes, there was definitely at least one story which talks about a sort of a new Finnish collection of this material. But here we've got four volumes in total, a lot of which is actually, it's the same stories in both volumes. So yeah, so it's a shame that there is not more accessible to us. But I think what we do have access to is the best stuff. All of it has been reprinted in Jeff Hawke's Cosmos, which was a magazine that no longer exists, because actually the whole strip was run. That was the purpose of the magazine, setting it up was to rerun, was to get a license from the Daily Express and to actually make all this material available for fans in England.
Right.
So if you were a member of the Jeff Hawke Society and you subscribed over about a dozen, 15 years, you would have got 30 magazines, sort of A4 magazines, and a number of collections, and that would be all the Jeff Hawke material, and even some of the material that is badged under, there's a strip called Lance McLean.
Oh, right.
Which comes after the end of, I think it was run in Scotland as Lance McLean, but I think the Daily Express reran it here and rebadged it as Jeff Hawke. So it's a sort of, that's a very different world, that strip, the Lance McLean strip. Sort of, there's been an apocalyptic moment on Earth. I think the Earth is either nudged out of its orbit, or, you know, it's damaged, and there are sort of three, I think it is, large sort of spacecraft which is orbiting Earth and, you know, solving problems on Earth that the survivors are encountering, and sometimes encountering problems in space as well. So that's a real sort of post-apocalyptic survivors story, so quite different for that. But like I say, it was, I think the Daily Express rebadged it as Jeff Hawke, but it's quite different from this.
Right. So two collections from Titan in the 80s, then two hardbacks in the 2008.
That's right, yep.
Overlord, yeah. And then The Ambassadors, I think,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it runs, Jeff Hawke ran what, 1954 to 1975, thereabouts?
70, I think it's, let's have a look, I think it's, yeah, 75 and starts in 54, yeah, so 30 years. No, sorry, 20 years.
20 years.
20 years every day. I mean, it's an astonishing achievement. I mean, there are a few. I mean, we, you know, Garth, Modesty Blaze, again, you know, longer lived strips. But the idea now of starting a newspaper strip and thinking, oh, I think this could run for 20 years. You know,
I might get 20 years.
You might get 20 weeks out of this. You know, not 20 years. So,
well, yeah.
Yeah, you know, there's not many pages. You know, the funny pages in newspapers are, you know, are pretty sparse territory these days, so it's hard work.
Sydney Jordan, not only a fantastic artist in his own right, and, you know, successful exhibition recently and everything, but he was a mentor to artists, and there's two notables that I noted from the 70s. Paul Neary, who got mentioned in your talk this morning, and then, of course, Mr. Bolland,
yeah, right at the end, I think, isn't it? Really?
Yes. Really, right at the end. He does about 12 or 13 episodes, he said.
Yeah.
Huge fan of Jeff Hawke, huge fan of Sydney Jordan's. I think Mr. Bolland downstairs told me that, well, he did tell me that he had to get the Italian editions in order to collect the stuff.
Yeah.
And, of course, he does the covers for this. These Titans and the hardbacks. And, of course, I think Well, let's talk about a cover for another book, because we've already done Masters of British Comic Art.
We have.
Episode 186 of the book club.
Yeah.
And on the front cover by Brian Bolland, Abbey Road, Judge Dredd, Tank Girl, Rupert the Bear. Who was the fourth one?
Dan Dare.
Dan Dare.
Yeah, so they're sort of walking across the Abbey Road, aren't they? Yeah.
And then in the background, there was an alien character that nobody really recognised. And of course, it's
Culverock. Yes, Culverock. He's just sort of near one of the cars. Like I say, he's sort of very, I recognise him, but he's a bit sort of hidden on the front page because you have this, like I say, this sort of iconic recreation of the Abbey Road sort of walk with these sort of very high profile characters that, almost people in the street would go, I recognise who those people are. But this actually, would you recognise Culverock in the background? No, you person in the street wouldn't. But if you're Brian Bolland, that is the strip that you love and you want to get in any mention you can of him. So, well done, Brian.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So there it is. Culverock from Jeff Hall is on the front cover of Masters of British Comic Art by David Roach, who's also downstairs at Lawless as well.
Lots of his beautiful art.
Lots of his beautiful art on for sale today. Yeah. He was selling some pages and doing very well. There's also a copy of Illustrators magazine about Sidney Jordan, is that right? Issue 10?
So Illustrators is a sort of four times a year sort of regular issues that are dedicated to all sorts of artists and illustrators from around the world, but they also produce specials on an ad hoc basis. So the Jeff and the Sidney Jordan is actually a double header issue with Jim Holdaway, who's another fantastic black and white artist, sort of a similar era. So there's so the two of them together a great combination. So I think special number 10 from Book Palace of the Illustrators magazine. I mean, magazine makes it sound like it's sort of light and floppy and
it's a book size
but
thing,
yeah they're typically the specials can be that they can range in size from sort of 60 pages up to nearly 200 pages. There's softbacks, hardback versions. They put out a Prince Valiant special recently, which is an astonishing collection of work. So the Sidney Jordan one there, well worth looking out for.
Okay, so we're getting close to Grail pages, but before that, we've got these four stories in Overlord.
Yeah.
Any particular favourites of the four?
I know. Council for the Defence, everyone says that's the best story, and it is brilliant. But I think Wondrous Lamp, it sets you down one path, and then it just goes off on another path, and it's just so wonderful. And there are problems of scale, as we say, and that's the bit in Toy Story where people are running around and they've got sort of things on their head and hiding under traffic cones, and definitely strong vibes from that. It's just so. Brilliantly done.
I was so delighted when I realised, we're sort of giving it away now, but I was so delighted when I realised they were going to do the alien invasion and they've misunderstood the scale twist, and it's just hilarious. Stuff running, aliens running around and some great Jeff, Sidney Jordan gets to draw some great sort of like angles and perspectives on humans for that one, which is wonderful. Yeah, but Council for the Defence is a great story, and it has my character Skipper, turns up to call Charleston on a raving, blazing nutter. Okay, so those are the best two stories of the four. What about now? This is slightly more tricky because you can get to choose a panel or a one strip or a page of strips as Grail pages for me to take pictures of and post on the forums when this comes out. What are your Grail pages from Sidney Jordan and Jeff Hawk?
For anyone reading along at home, there are no page numbers in this book, so it's
tricky.
It is particularly annoying. But they all do have reference numbers, all these all the strips. So you just have to go, I want to go to, H2162, for instance, and then you go, oh god, where's that? That's about, it feels like it's about halfway through, and that's a story that's almost the last page or the last strip in the the Wondrous Lamp strip, and it's just got, you know, this alien setting off, you know, on his sort of Earth adventures, and he's got his sort of classic sort of tramp sort of, you know, stick over his shoulder with a sort of a knotted handkerchief on the other end. That's what he needs to get by on Earth, you know. So I think, you know, that's a really sort of fantastic image, that sort of that alien off to explore the world. Or then you would probably pick, you know, something from Council for the Defence, so maybe H2204, which Jeff and Mac and Chalcedon are in prison. And again, it's one of these, it's one panel, you know, it's a one panel wonder, and you know, Chalcedon is making up this ludicrous story about this particular jewel that you know, is a great sentimental value, belonged to my mother. It turns out that it, you know, it's not a sentimental jewel that, you know, that belonged to his mother. But, you know, he's sort of crying these crocodile tears, and Jeff and Mac are looking on, and, you know, Jeff is more sort of, well, you know, I'm reading this, I'm playing this with a very straight bat, whereas Mac is, I don't think so. I think this is not what it is. And, you know, it turns out that, you know, his is the more cynical view, but he knows the character he's dealing with. And so, yeah, so H2204,
right,
in the prison cell.
Oh, very nice. Okay, well, I will post images of those two strips when this episode comes out, so people can see some of this wonderful Sydney Jordan art. And, of course, in H2204, you get some of the background shading and cross-hatching we've been talking about, which will make Johnny Cannon very excited. Yeah. What was the number of the Wondrous Lamp strip? Do you remember?
That was H2162, with the Clarid setting off on his...
oh, yes, there he is.
On his, you know, on his sort of adventures on Earth, you know, and a sort of...
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, I might take...
What would you take, Amy?
Well, I might take... before I ask you about a cover, I might take H2268, which is Skipper calling Chalcedon and Blazing Nutter.
Ah.
Although I did sort of want panel or a strip with Culverock in it, particularly Culverock moaning to higher authority in a rather sort of prissy bureaucratic fashion, like H2265, which has a bit of space stuff in it, and then Culverock appealing to higher authorities. It's amazing that this book it's got so much space lore in it, you know.
it's quite different from, you know, sort of we've talked about, you know, destroying planets, and it's like, no, this is how you destroy people in this world, is you gotta legalize them to death or something. So
I read, this is off topic, but I read a non-comic book which does have pictures in it, called City on Mars by the Winesmiths, and she is a space scientist, he's a graphic novelist, so he illustrates this book. And it's all about whether or not we could and should go to Mars. And there's quite a large section in it about space law, more space law than I was expecting.
It wasn't advertised on the back page when you read it. Yeah.
And I was sort of, as you know, as people will know, I was very interested in the space medicine of it all, but actually the space law of it all. And I was thought, like, I was thinking of that when I read in Jeff Hawke, that Jeff Hawke, pretty good on space.
More than you, not much space medicine, but then Mac in the second story.
Your second in command gets possessed by some sort of alien upgrade or whatever.
What's the space medicine answer for that then?
And he gets, does he get the characteristic sort of silver eyes for a while?
Something possesses him.
White eyes. Let's give you a Brian Bolland cover as well, because I think you've got...
copy in front of me is Overlord, so that's the classic cover there. But actually, I prefer the book two cover, I have to say, which is a sort of set in some... it looks like a gambling den of iniquity, where there, you know, Jeff is probably playing for the chance to save the world, and the... yeah, I think on the cover to book one, the Jeff character seems a bit sort of stiff and formal, whereas I think in book two, not only do you get all these fantastic space aliens, but Jeff is, you know, the centre of the action, and is, you know, facing off against this sort of, looks like a lobster, and he's got his sort of claw in a special a case to to stop him nipping your head off or whatever he could probably do with his very large space claw. So,
if you've got a giant space lobster with claws, they put him in a sort of what's the word, Hannibal Lecter type claw mask thing, isn't it?
Yeah, keep everybody safe. So so I prefer that cover, and maybe Brian prefers the third cover, which he's very keen to talk about, as we know.
As we said already, there's a third cover he did for the Titan collections that never got published. And Brian did finish it himself at some point.
I think it's a sort of an image of someone that's sort of sitting in a chair, and they have been doing some typing, but excuse me, but the chair is sort of, you know, it's been levitated, and therefore this person is suddenly hanging up in the middle of a room trying to do their typing. So yeah, it's particularly sort of silly sort of cover. So a lot of fun.
Okay, so unless you read Italian, then you're going to need to go to eBay and get these books, either the hardbacks or the softbacks, but they are out there on eBay.
Yeah,
they're available.
Yeah,
and the Titans from the 80s, of course, may be suffering spinal issues, but the hardbacks are around, so that's good.
Yeah.
I look forward to our next discussion in a year's time when we will be choosing. who knows? You might have another classic British comic creator or character for us to talk about.
I'm sure we can think of something.
Sydney Jordan, you know, I hope when this episode comes out he's still hale and hearty and still phoning Brian Bolland up on a regular basis.
let's hope so.
Before we ask you about guest projects, well, let's just say we're at Lawless Convention in Bristol for the first time. You have been hosting panels.
I have. I've made my debut.
You made your debut as a panel moderator. Okay. So this morning, first thing at 10:15, you got to interview
Alan Davis.
Big guest who's never been to Lawless before.
No.
First year at Lawless, first interview on Saturday morning, and you're in, Richard.
I'm not sure he really he's very keen on being interviewed per se, but anyway, from my angle, We talked, you know, at ease for 45 minutes, so that was what I wanted. So I hope it went
very well.
Yeah.
I thought the most interesting snippet that I got was that originally DR and Quinch were supposed to be identical reptilian aliens, and it was Alan Davis's idea to make them look completely different.
Although
he did realise later on he'd just done Asterix.
That's why they're so successful, is that really they're just Asterix and Obelix, and we just love that. So no, he was very, very forthcoming, very open to, you know, how we sort of got to where he is, and was very happy.
I know you're a big cricket fan, but it did feel like they put you in to open the batting this morning, didn't they? So that was good. But you're also tomorrow morning. Yeah. Who have you got tomorrow morning?
Tomorrow morning, I'm talking to Dave Kendall, who older listeners may remember appearing in Toxic magazine back in the 90s, Pat Mills' brainchild. So he worked on that. I think that was his debut comic strip that he did. And then no more comic strips for a long time. He goes off and he does other things in other industries. But he's now returned to the fold, into the pages of 2000 AD. And he's working on Dead World.
Yes.
Has been for quite a while now. So, he's a Bristolian. So I think he's not come far. So, after this, I'm going down to the bar to meet him. We'll have a pre-interview chat. Get us both warmed up for tomorrow.
Right.
And then tomorrow morning we are... this year, often at Lawless, there's a room full of art, original art. This year there is unfortunately no art, but it does mean there are now two panel rooms. So there's one more sort of formal panel room, and then there's a second room which is a bit more informal. So I'm interviewing Dave Kendall tomorrow, but almost everybody will be at the Brian Bolland slightly informal talk in the second panel room.
Oh, right.
But for anyone who stays, me and Dave Kendall, 10:15 tomorrow.
I shall be there. Of course, by the time this episode comes out, Lawless will be long gone for 2025. Exactly. But it is a fantastic convention. We've mentioned Mr. Bolland's downstairs, we've mentioned Alan Davis, we've mentioned David Roach. Any other standouts this year for you from guests?
Some guests it's just lovely to see each year. You know, you sort of bump into Henry Flint in the bar of an evening and, you know, buy him a drink. That's always very nice. Hunt Emerson is here this year.
Yeah, Hunt Emerson is fantastic.
So really good to see him. I guess he has done work for the 2000 AD umbrella, I'm going to say, because he did, I think, was it in Dice Man? Did he do one episode of Dice Man.
He did. He did the You Are Maggie Thatcher, I think, in Dice Man. Didn't
yeah,
he?
Yes. Yeah. So that's as far as he's got. But no. So it's good to see him here. Ali Fell is downstairs, who we've talked about on this podcast in the past in the Masters of British Comics. I said how. Well, at that time I said how highly I rated her, but yes. it turned out that...
It's a bloke. They're a bloke.
Yeah. I've got a sketch coming, so it's...
Looking forward
to picking that up tomorrow morning.
Ali Fell is doing those sort of British ghost folk story comics, and with the most beautiful art you can imagine.
Yeah.
Just... gorgeous
so fantastic. So again, he's not been before, so no, it's great to see him. So another great guest list, Sue. Well done Sue
Well done to Sue and the crew. So let's jump to boysadventurecomics.blogspot.com, which is how many entries is it now? Over 9,000.
Feels like over 9,000, but no, it's over well, probably 3,250, something like that, by the time this comes out.
3,000.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, no, we're working on it.
9 years. That's
9 years. Yes, 9 years in September 2025.
Right.
This will be going. So still every day something's coming out.
Have you missed the day since September?
No.
Missed a day. No, good. No,
it's all there. So yeah. So cover all aspects of British comics in there. You know, there's a lot to choose from, but you know, we've got upcoming posts on rare comic jigsaws, always an area of interest. Continue my look at obscure Dan Dare and Eagle merchandise, calendars, always kind of keen to talk about comics calendars, more Daily Star non-Judge Dredd material, so you can look forward to that. Cartoon Museum, project looking at books at the Cartoon Museum, inspired by your Ronald Searle episode with Tony. I thought, I should get that. And then I thought, well, actually, there's all these other books that the Cartoon Museum have published. I didn't have any of them, so I've been slowly purchasing my way through the Cartoon Museum big, thick catalogues that they used to produce, seemingly, you know, for every exhibition. They have a new exhibition every 3 months, and it would always come accompanied by a big, thick catalogue. So I've been working my way through those. And somebody sent me recently some Simon Fraser early sort of small press comics work,
right?
So that will be appearing at some point as well. So something for everyone. New readers are always welcome.
boysadventurecomics.blogspot.com, link in the show notes. Interviewing and moderating panels at Lawless. Also shout out to Justin Marriott, another book clubber, and his continuing work on Battling Britons, and you continue to proofread for him and fact check.
Proofread and fact check for that. So no, always a pleasure. You know, Justin's out there fighting the good fight, producing print on demand magazines for Amazon about all sorts of topics. But yeah, Battling Britons and comics are all okay. So yeah, I'm lucky enough to work with him on those and stuff for the Book Palace
as well. Yeah, BookPalace.com. Mention those as well. Is it the Illustrators magazine?
That is the Illustrators, the regular editions and the special editions as well. So, you know, there's a great variety of artists in there, some of which I've come across a little bit, some of which I've come across a lot, and a lot that I haven't come across at all. But it, you know, looks at the sort of illustration as a medium over the last 100, 200 years. So, yeah, always interesting selection of people in there. So, yeah, comes out 4 times a year. Illustrators magazine, check it out.
Links in the show notes. Yeah. One more thing to mention. This morning we had the third Lawless hot dog run.
Yeah.
3.5 mile run round Bristol Harbourside on a Saturday morning. Now, Park Run, of course, has the tail walker. And this morning for the hot dog run, you fulfilled the role of tail walker and proving that you can just walk it and get round.
You can just walk
it and still be back in time for breakfast.
Exactly. 50 minutes, I think it took me to get around. You did give me a slight head start, which was probably a good idea, since, even the slowest runners amongst you overtook me, relatively quickly. But it's fine. I could see you for about halfway round. Shout out to Filippo for wearing a bright blue T-shirt that I could spot from a long way away. So well done, that man. It was a good... It's a good excuse to get up this morning and go
get your steps in.
Get my steps in. So, enjoyed it. I'll do it again.
Great, and you got your medal, and you are now full eagle. So next year, if anybody's interested in the fourth Lawless Hot Dog Run in the last weekend or the bank holiday weekend of May, Richard has proved that you can just walk round and you get your medal.
Yeah, I know the route now. That's it. Yeah.
It's a nice, easy route, and it's possible to just walk it and get a medal.
Yeah, you see interesting bits of Bristol on the way around. The SS Great Britain we went past.
Yes.
Go past the Aardman animation.
Yes.
There's something that looks like it could have gone to a boat that looks like it could have gone to the New World in about 1460. That's parked in the harbour at the moment. Interesting buildings, industrial architecture. And there was, and I thought, and again, shout out to Conrad, I thought I'd spotted a vat of danger acid, but luckily it wasn't danger acid.
Okay.
I think it was just prussic acid or something, but yeah, I saw it and worried for him, but it was all right. It was on a train line, so.
There's also a blank wall where there used to be a Banksy as well. Because somebody pointed it out to me, that's where the Banksy used to be. Oh, okay. But yeah, very good. Anyway, so thank you for doing that this morning.
Thank you.
Proving that you can walk it.
Yeah. And don't be afraid to sign up if you just want to walk it.
Yeah. You can get your medal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's it. We've done. So same time next year with hopefully another British classic creator. We'll see. Yeah. You get to pick, obviously. Yeah. You've got a whole year to
do. I'll think of something. Yeah.
I'm fascinated by the Illustrator magazines. Yeah. I might have to track down issue 10. If I can find a copy.
Yeah.
As you say, they're quite hefty things, aren't they?
They are quite hefty things, yeah. I mean, you know, the production values are, you know, incredibly high. You know, there's lots of scans of original art, you know, from heritage auctions. So, you know, just absolutely smothered in original art. So, yeah, very beautiful, always to look at, so.
And I don't know how you fit them in, because I've been in your office at home, at your home, I'm not sure how you're going to fit any more stuff in there. It's fairly packed, isn't it?
It's like a very complicated game of Tetris. I'm constantly playing in that room to squeeze it all in. But so far, the structure, the foundations are holding up very well. So
good. Great stuff. Well, thank you very much, Richard, for once again being my guest here in my room at Lawless on the Book Club.
Thank you very much for the invite. Look forward to doing it again next year.
Yep. And thank you for everyone to listening to the Lawless Book Club. Find all the links at Megacity Book Club and boysadventurecomics.blogspot.com. Go to Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, Mastodon, Substack and the 2080 forums to see the art that Rich and I have been discussing. And if you have a book, a story, a creator, or a wild topic that you want to come on the book club and talk about, email me, mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. And that'll do us. Until next time, until a year's time at Lawless, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
It's goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from me.